Welcome, everyone. We're just going to give a couple minutes so people can continue to log on, and then we'll get started. Okay, I'm seeing the numbers sort of level off. So I think we're at a sort of critical mass where we can get started. Thank you all for joining us today for the Computer Science for All program webinar. This is information and guidance about the new solicitation NSF 24-555 CS for All research and research practice partnerships. This is a program that is jointly supported by two directorates at NSF, the Directorate for Computer and Information Science Engineering, or SCIES, and the STEM Education Directorate, or EDU. So my name is Allison Kennedy, and I am from the SCIES Directorate. I'm also the SCIES lead for the program. I'm joined here today by Feng Ke, who is my colleague in EDU, who leads the EDU side of the program, as well as Jeff Forbes, another SCIES program officer that supports the program. Margaret Jarrell-Marson is not able to join us today, but she is another program officer from EDU. Our contact information is on the slide here, so you can feel free to reach out with any questions after the webinar. And we also have a team email there at the bottom of the screen. So if you send an email to that, if you're not sure which of us to reach out to, we will all get that. Before we get into some of the details about the program, some important dates to keep in mind. So the current deadline for this year is June 4th at 5 p.m. your time. Next year, the deadline will be February 12th, and then after that, it will be the second Wednesday in February. So since the last solicitation, there's been a few changes that we'll talk about today. The first is that the contact information for the program officers has been updated. So the slide I just shared a couple slides ago. The eligibility of who can submit proposals has changed a little bit, and we've added some information in the description of the small RPP and the research strand projects. So in terms of eligibility, the types of institutions that can apply, there are three groups. The first is institutions of higher education. So these can be 2 or 4 year universities, including community colleges that are accredited in and have a campus in the US. The second group are nonprofits and non-academic organizations. So this would include things like museums, observatories, research labs, professional societies, and other similar organizations. They must be located in the US. And the third group are tribal nations. So any American Indian or Alaska Native tribe, band, nation, pueblo, village, or community that is federally recognized by the Secretary of the Interior is eligible for this program. Note that these are the institution types. There are no restrictions on who can serve as PI as long as they are coming from one of these types of institutions. So let's start out with some of the program goals. So the overarching goal of this entire program is to provide all US students with the opportunity to participate in computer science and computational thinking education in their schools at the pre-K through 12 level. So this is formal school settings. In order to reach the all in the CS for all, this program also aims to address underrepresentation in computing. So any proposal for this program must address in a significant way the longstanding underrepresentation of many groups in computing relative to their participation in pre-K-12, post-secondary education, and or the workforce. You can find a lot of national statistics at NSF's National Center for Science and Engineering Statistics. Particularly want to point you toward the diversity in STEM report. The most recent one has some more numbers about underrepresentation in computing fields. Okay, so let's dive into the different project strands. I'm going to first talk about the research practice partnership strands, and then I'll hand it off to Feng Feng to talk more about the research strand. So there are a few principles, shared principles of research practice partnerships, although the strategies about how they are implemented can really vary depending on the goals. But what they do share in common is that they're long-term collaborations that require diversity of expertise. So starting with a really well-organized and intentional team that includes researchers and pre-K through 12 practitioners, those practitioners including, you know, teachers, administrators, and counselors. But the team can also include other community members, foundations, policy, and industry partners as well. The main activity of an RPP is the engagement of research with practice. So all team members are sharing participation in the rigorous research about problems of practice, and they work together to iteratively define and refine their shared goals, research questions, metrics, and implementations. The outcomes of RPPs are meant to drive toward educational improvement and equitable transformation. Some key elements of RPPs are that they, again, feature engagement of research with practice as the lead activity. They should strengthen organizational capacity to reliably produce valued computer science and computational thinking outcomes for students. They should build efforts to succeed when they're implemented at scale. And as I mentioned before, involving a range of stakeholders in different stages of inquiry research, and that these are translated into practical use. For this program, we encourage proposals from teams that are in the early stages of RPP formation, as well as in the more advanced stages. And particularly this year, we're really interested in encouraging folks to think about early stages of RPP formation. The program is divided into three strands with the different focus on different grade levels. So the pre-K through 8 strand focuses on integrating computer science and computational thinking into existing courses. The high school strand focuses on preparing and supporting teachers to teach standalone computer science courses. So the main focus there is PD, though it is also possible for projects to adapt or enhance instructional materials as well. And then the third one is the K through 14 pathways strand, and this one focuses on really developing the types of supports and policies needed at the district and school level to incorporate computer science and computational thinking across grades. And you'll notice the 14 there. So there is a little flexibility to build into early post-secondary experiences, but building on pre-K through 12. There are three funding levels for the RPP strands, and they all have sort of different expectations and levels of impact. So the small proposals are $300K for up to 2 years. And these are really meant to support that initial team formation and the steps to build a well-integrated RPP. The impact level of a small is expected to be at the district level. A medium RPP is $1 million for up to 3 years. These are meant to support scaling of a promising approach by an already established RPP team. You do not have to have had a small from this program to apply for a medium, but you should have evidence of an existing team and prior success. We expect medium proposals to have a state or regional impact. And then finally, the large proposals are $2 million for up to 4 years. And these are meant to support widespread scaling of a strong RPP team with a lot of evidence-based approaches. And we expect these to have a national impact. for any of the RPP strands at any proposal size, we expect a few things that the proposals to address. So one, the proposal should clearly delineate the computer science or computational thinking content that will be taught. The proposal should address working with communities that support the full spectrum of diverse computing talent. So addressing underrepresentation of groups and groups who are underserved in computing, including the relevant literature and plans of action and metrics. The proposal should document if and or how the approach can or will be scaled or has been already. It should specify jointly developed research questions and specify the investment of all of the partners in the RPP team. It should provide work plans for implementation, improvement, data collection, analysis, and use. So really all aspects of the RPP cycle. And it should draw from the RPP literature in assessing the quality of the partnership and articulating plans for success. Here are a few selected resources about developing and managing, maintaining an RPP. These are in the solicitation as well. So, and you'll have access to this PowerPoint so you can follow up on those. Okay, I am now going to hand it over to Fengfeng to talk about the research strand. And Fengfeng, when you're ready for me to change a slide, just let me know.
Okay, yeah. So thank you, everyone. My name is Fengfeng Ke. I am a program officer from the Division of DIL in EDU. So for the research strand of the CS4R, the major purpose is that the project will be designed to support and contribute to the development of an evidence-informed knowledge base. And that will illuminate how learning in the domain of computer science best occurs and how it can be supported most effectively for diverse students under different circumstances. So because of that, we really propose that the research strand proposal should have very clear understanding about the literature that it's related to or governing CS and CT education. And then you should also have a clear research plan with very specified research questions that were motivating the theory contributing or knowledge building based on the empirical research or potentially the synthesis research. And then it will also potentially try to highlight the best practices for teaching and learning of computing, especially for diverse students under different circumstances. So for this current solicitation, the funding level or the budget limit is $750K up to 3 years. So as we mentioned a little bit, the scope of research projects is actually to really to enrich the knowledge base governing how students learn computing throughout their education pathway. And again, the CS4R has been focusing on pre-K-12 and pathway. So when we talk about the how students learn computing, we don't really include the students who are post-secondary, such as university or college students. We focus on K-12 or pre-K-12 students and prioritize a clear relationship between research and practice. And just like the other proposals, the proposals for RPP, the clear relationship between research and practice is also highlighted in research strand. You possibly don't need or require you to have a long-term practitioner partnership, but it's always a great strength or idea to think about the practice when you study or when you develop the evidence from research. And the research strand project support the participation of the full spectrum of diverse computing talent, including groups that have been traditionally underrepresented or underserved in computing. And we also encourage the research that will focus on synthesizing or demonstrating knowledge of the relevant literature that pertains to roots of underrepresentation. So potentially you could do meta-analysis or the other kind of systematic review kind of research to really delineate the evidence that will contributing to the knowledge about the roots of underrepresentation or the design knowledge of intervention or potentially both. And the plan that explore ways of improving representation or maybe the assessment development or educational measurement development that help to create clear metrics and methodologies for documenting outcomes of learning or outcomes of professional development in CS and CT are also welcome or appreciated. And the topics are typically taught in courses that require prerequisite course for in computer science are not intended to be focused for the CS for all. Again, because we focus on pre-K-12 and pathway, so if some of the coursework that require the prerequisite knowledge of CS and CT, they may be considered, but they are not the focus of this program. And then there are some of areas of research that you can consider, but of course this list is not thorough. It just suggested some of the questions or research areas that we think can be integrated into the CS4O program. So for example, how students learn CS or CT as a literacy, just like how they learn or develop the literacy of reading and writing, and how CT can be supported, and what developmental trajectory for CT look like, how computing competencies are learned in context of STM disciplines. In other words, is how can we integrate the CS or CT into the context of STM learning in a much more effective, engaging, and learner-adaptive manner will be part of the research area that we will want. And the study focusing on longitudinal impacts of CT or CS education experience in pre-K-12 or pathway, in other words, is K-14, will be also appreciated, especially given advances like AI. So potentially, if you have the AI augmented, AI powered, or AI enhanced project that is related to CS and CT education or experience in pre-K-12 or pathway, that will be part of the research area to be considered. And how CT development can be framed in ways that invite, value, and build on students' diverse cultural and linguistics resources or assets will also be appreciated and welcome in CS for all. And then another potential area is what educators need to know and how they learn instructional abilities. All right, I think that's for the research chart.
Great, thank you, Fang Fang. The last bit of information we want to share today is some sort of logistics and details about preparing your proposal. So for any NSF proposal, you should look at the Proposal and Award Policy and Procedures Guide, the PAPG. We have updated it. So the most recent version is 24-1. This document provides proposal preparation and submission guidance. So it's sort of a handbook of everything you need to know about submitting an NSF proposal. It describes the review process and the criteria. It outlines why proposals might be returned without review or otherwise not accepted. And it also describes how to withdraw, return, or if a proposal is declined. If you have an NSF award already, it also contains information about guiding and managing your award. For 2024, there were a couple of new updates to note. So if you have a postdoc researcher or a graduate student on your proposal, you will need to provide a mentoring plan as an additional document. And there have been some changes to the formatting for biographical sketches. Another thing to be aware of as you're putting a proposal together is a new effort called Educate AI. This is a multi-directorate effort to really enable educators to make high quality, audience appropriate AI educational experiences. And the goal here is to make these available nationwide at the K-12, community college, four-year college, graduate students, and adults interested in formal training in AI. That is the effort as a whole. As a first phase, we have a Dear Colleague letter that focuses on pre-K-12 and undergrad. So relevant to this is the invitation of proposals that might advance inclusive AI education for pre-K-12 in response to the CS for All solicitation. So basically, we are encouraging you to think about AI as a topic area within the scope of the CS for All program. A couple of things to note about the actual proposal itself. So in your project summary, you have three sections, the overview, intellectual merit statement, and broader impact statement. The very first line of your overview in the project summary should include the proposal strand and size to which you are applying. And then your overview must also include a list, and I mean like a bulleted list of project elements that include, again, the size class, proposal strand, the school districts or other institutions involved in the project. So who are the RPP partners for the RPP strands, and then who are the who are involved in their research strand projects, and the intended populations to be served by the project activities. If you are writing a proposal that is responding to that Educate AI DCL, you should also include Educate AI with a colon before your project title. Now, in the project description, and this is the full body of your proposed activities, just some notes about what to include there. So the main part of this narrative is these merit review criteria. So addressing the intellectual merit or the potential for your project to advance knowledge in the field, and broader impacts, which is the potential to benefit society and contribute to the achievement of specific societal outcomes. For this solicitation, there are also two additional criteria that you must answer. So the proposal must address these two questions. Does the proposal identify the characteristics and needs of the intended population to be served? And does the proposal include specific plans or strategies for addressing or accommodating the particular needs of participants of the intended populations? So if your proposal does not include these two criteria, it will be declined. So make sure you address those. Some other elements that should be in your project description for all projects should have an evaluation plan. That's for any RPP strand project and the research strand. This can be an external review panel or advisory board, or can be a complete third-party evaluator. All projects must also have a dissemination plan to disseminate the work to a broader audience. For medium and large RPP proposals, there must also be a work plan for the implementation, data collection, analysis, improvement, and use. Lots of details there. And they should also describe the capacity of management and administrative structures to administer the activity. So a bit of a higher bar indicating how the work will be implemented. For research proposals, as Feng Feng mentioned, there should be a very clear research plan in the project description. Also, don't forget the data management plan. This is an additional document. That website there has the NSF guidance for what should be included in a data management plan, as well as directorate specific requirements. So if your proposal is going to size or EDU, you might want to look on there to see if there are any specific requirements. Okay. So I wanted to just conclude here with an overview of sort of the process once you've submitted a proposal, so you have a sense of the timeline here. So from the announcement of the opportunity, there are 90 days that is posted live, during which time you should be preparing your proposal. You submit your proposal either through grants.gov or research.gov. And once it is at NSF, the program officer will begin the merit review process. This could be a panel review process, so we convene a panel of experts that provide recommendations. It could be ad hoc, a combination of those things, and or internal evaluation as well. From there, it goes to the program officer, who makes an analysis and their recommendations. After that, it will go to our supervisor, so at the division level, who will concur with the recommendations that have been made by the panel and the program officer. So if the proposal is decided to be declined, then at that level, that declination will go directly to the organization. If the proposal is recommended for award, it then goes up to the Division of Grants and Agreements, who do their own set of review and processing. And then they communicate with the organization once that is ready to be awarded. If you are a new awardee, meaning you haven't received NSF funding in the past 5 years, there might be some additional communication from the Division of Grants and Agreement if it gets to that step. So the overall timeline here is 90 days of proposal preparation, 6 months upon receipt to DD concurrence, and then about 30 days for DGA to review and process should it be recommended for award. So we'll stop there, and we will look at the Q&A and answer your questions. Jeff, I know you've been sort of answering these as we've been presenting. Are there some that you want to just share out loud, or should we move to the open questions?